can't do this.
You can't do this.
This is fucked. Dogs?
Yeah.
Fucking dogs?
Yeah.
She's a fucking dog.
Are you a vegan?
I'm not a fucking vegan. Stop, get that camera out of my face. What's the difference between a dog and a fucking cow?
Say it.
What it's is cultural. We've been with dogs for tens of thousands of years.
Hello, everyone. This is Ryan, and you are listening to The Vegan Report. What you just heard was the angry reaction of a college student who discovered a booth in his campus promoting Elwood's organic dog meat farm. The dog farmers were even distributing free samples of dog meat, and that just brought him to the edge.
You're extreme, oh brother. I'm extreme. Yes.
I have a dog! I love my dog! I've had so many dogs!
Now, what if I told you that the dog meat samples were actually plant-based mock meat, and the farmers, vegans, vegans pretending to be dog farmers? Why? What's the point of doing this? Well, that is the question we are answering today with none other than the genius brain behind this initiative, Molly Elwood. Molly is an animal rights advocate and writer, copywriter, and editor for brands by profession. Visit the description below for the link to the full meltdown video of that college kid, and also the link to the very funny and insightful social media account of Elwood's organic dog meat. So thank you, Molly, for being on the show. Thank you for having accepted my invitation.
No problem. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with this. You are a writer, and I guess you understand the narratives we tell in our culture and to ourselves. And can you maybe, you know, and feel free to answer this question however you want, but give us an idea of the power of narratives in the animal world, you know, how, for instance, we justify our eating habits or the way we see animals and all the stories we tell ourselves around that.
Yeah. So I think that I'd kind of interpret that being that the stories we are given when we grow up, as we're growing up, about how we treat animals and what animals can feel and what they process and, you know, what our relationship to them, what our relationships are like. I think we know the answers as kids because we ask the questions that are really kind of, you know, obvious. You know, I remember as a little kid getting a kitten and being like, well, why is the kitten being taken from the mother and being told, well, the mother doesn't care, you know, that she has so many babies, she doesn't care. So that's a story now that we tell ourselves, and that just becomes another thread within the quilt that is the story of what we tell ourselves about animals. And when we tell these stories again and again, we don't question them because somebody in authority at some point told us what they were. And so we didn't have to go through, you know, what does that actually mean? So I think that a lot of animal rights activism is about, it's not even deprogramming. It's raising these stories and asking people themselves to go back and ask why. And now that you're an adult yourself, you can think about, you know, what do these stories actually mean? So
interesting, because I always think, you know, what are we fighting exactly? Are we fighting big ag? Are we fighting stupidity? And you're making me think, you know, maybe we're fighting just immaturity, just childhood. We're just asking people to grow up.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I put on the Elwood website that I felt was pretty pretty impactful just to me, I wrote it and then I thought about it and went, yeah, I agree with this idea that is, you know, a lot of the things we told ourselves we had to because that's how we were able to get along. For example, you know, in order to slaughter animals, we would have to think that they don't feel pain as much because that's the only way we could, as humans, thinking, empathetic humans, that we could get over it. We'd have to think that we have to take animals away from their parents, but now we don't have to anymore. And like now it's like those children's stories helped us get along when we had to do the hard things. But now it's like we've graduated and it's time to, you know, put away those And it's funny because it's not putting away the childish things. These are putting away the adult, the rational adult hardening that we had to do. So.
And how do you explain the speciesism dimension of it? Like, there are stories of, Bambi, and I did an episode on fish, and we talked a lot about Nemo and how this movie, which is about animal abuse and getting a fish out of a tank, provoked, when people watched that movie, they felt the need to go in a pet shop and just own, purchase a clownfish. So, how do you explain that?
Oh, well, I think, obviously we have feelings for animals that we can relate to, or that we have feelings, cute, cuddly feelings for. But all again, when you go back to stories, all it takes is a good story to make you realize that they're thinking and feeling, and we have empathy for them. I remember seeing Finding Nemo, and it was funny. I wasn't vegan. I had just buried my dog, and it was a big dog. Like, it was a Pyrenees that I had to dig up. This is a real story. This isn't me being funny farmer. It was the only dog I have ever owned, and I had to dig a really big grave. And then I went to go see Finding Nemo, and it destroyed me. I just remember in the front row of the audience just sobbing my eyes out, just destroyed. And I probably went out after that and ate animals because you're not thinking about it. But I now have empathy for dogs and fish, and I probably went and ate chicken. But I think it's the speciesism is, again, it's a program that we're just running because we don't question.
But then how do we tell the right stories? Because if I had, to think about the, perfect story to tell about fish in order to trigger empathy in people, it would have been Finding Nemo. Yet
Right.
people's,
Well, go on.
yeah, exactly. And then people went exploiting more animals because of that movie.
Oh, so when you were saying then they go buy them. I don't think people's relationship with animals, we still say, even I as a vegan, just I use the word ownership, even though I don't mean it. I'm a vegan. I don't think we should own anyone or any animals, but at the same time, it's a shortcut. It's a way to speak the language of everyone to say, I owned this dog. I owned this fish. I wanted to have a relationship. And I think that the pet ownership, quote unquote, ownership is our desire to have relationships with animals. And what's really funny is, like, for example, I'm in an urban area right now, and I'm feeding some crows, and I want them to be my friend. And I had this realization that they like how kind of narcissistic that is for me to be like, I want them to like me. And they're going, I have to live, I have to survive, I have to feed my family. And thank God this individual is putting nuts out for me, but I'm not going to like, there's no relationship here. Animals don't need us. I mean, maybe, cats and dogs have those, bonds to us, but it's a selfish want that humans, and we like, just like we want food and we want companionship, we want pets, and we want to be heroes, and so.
I just thought, the image that appeared in my mind was that of like a psychopath who just kidnaps someone, and
Right.
I've seen that in a movie somewhere. Maybe,
Be my friend. You'll
yeah,
be my friend.
exactly. So are we the
Well,
psychopaths?
I think we are. And I think I mean, obviously there are animals that we domesticated animals that need us, but they need us for survival. And I really think that dogs would probably prefer to hang out with a bunch of dogs than people, but they can't live right now without us, so we get the benefit, right? But yeah, it is a bit psycho. We're like, come be my friend forever. I'll give you a warm bed. You'll love it.
Okay, I want to go back to the words we use around animals. Is it truly that important to say, for instance, companion animal or just animal instead of pet? or purchase instead of adopt. You know, what's do you have a strong opinion about that?
I have a feeling that, and I don't, you know, I'm ready to be attacked for it. I think vegans end up othering ourselves a lot by using language that is, while more morally appropriate, it really distances us from everyday people who aren't vegan. You know, by me saying companion animal, or, you know, it's one thing to say it and define why I'm saying that and tell someone about it. But if I'm just talking with a coworker, I'm not going to. But at the same time, as I've started thinking more about the word pet and how I was thinking about the way humans might use it about each other in an endearment, but it's still, it's pet is like you're a thing that I own, that you bring me joy, and you do not, there's no interaction from you upwards. It's just me and my thoughts about you. And how, you know, so on one hand, I do think that we can be careful with our language, and we can talk about it. We can talk about its meaning. But I also think that in everyday interactions, sometimes we can be shooting ourselves in the foot. So,
yeah, I think lots of vegans out there are not truly conscious of the image people have of us. And one of my favorite meme is that of, you know, it's like a, you know, it shows what's the vision that carnivores have of a vegetarian. Another fellow carnivore, and then of a vegan. And the vegan, every time, you know, whatever person is looking at, you know, it's something otherworldly. It's an alien. It's an extremist, you know, terrorist. It's like, it's my favorite meme. And I try to remember that when I go into a conversation with someone who's not vegan.
Right.
So you have that. You also are conscious of that, you know, your initiative, you know, you have to be conscious of that, doing what you're doing. So can you describe first the image that people have of vegans, just as a reminder?
Oh, my God. Well, I can just say, I mean, I'm in a very liberal city, and if you're vegan, you are so counterculture. We are, maybe you're a punk vegan and you're pierced and you're wearing black and you're wearing a shirt that says meat is murder, and you're going to be yelling and you're going to be dousing people, you know, yourself with blood in front of the Chipotle. And it's just, it's the struggle to wake people up, and I'm going to be in your face, and I'm going to show it to you right now. At any instant, I'm going to say, I'm a vegan, by the way. I know it was funny when I first went vegan, I bought all the ironic shirts and all the stickers, and I had a pierced nose, and I was like, I should get a tattoo. I don't have a tattoo, but now's the time. I'm going to get a big vegan tattoo. And at the same time, as I started to become more vegan, just in like that, I mean, that I don't mean to say like more vegan, but as I started talking to more people about it, I realized that I could reach more people by toning my appearance down and looking more like everyone else. So then you can kind of surprise them and go, yeah, you could be vegan. Vegan doesn't mean, you know, is chewing everything that is, you know, normal, or you don't have to go yell in front of a Chipotle. I mean, we would like you to, but you can also just be at work and bring vegan cookies, and you can go sign petitions, and you can try and talk to other people. And I think that that's just, you know, it's a journey a lot of us take.
I get the punk rock, you know, image of vegans, but there's also the image of, you know, the obnoxious vegan who is ignorant, who doesn't, you know, get
so there's the idea of the idealistic vegan, you know, that, or the hypocritical vegan. I mean, it's the thing that we really love to hate, the hypocritical vegan, the vegan who's eating avocados or almonds, or the vegan who's never stepped foot on a farm, or the vegan who, you know, who lives in a city and has access to everything but has never been in a rural area. And it's really easy to be it's really easy to shut down. To try, if you were a meat eater, it's very easy to shut people down with these images because some of them are true. A lot of us have never been on a farm. A lot of us do live in, urban centers, and it's an easy, that's an easy win for them.
Why do we have this image of vegans? I will put the blame on social media, and I'm thinking right now of the vegan teacher, like personalities, big personalities like that who are out there, and there's a lot of attention around them. But what is your explanation?
Well, I mean, for the most, I mean, a lot of it is true. A lot of the perceptions of vegans are true, and I think, we all have also the idea of when we go vegan, we all go on the journey of having to talk to people about it, and we all become obnoxious because we're idealistic and think that if I tell you these things, you're going to change your mind too. And then you have the emotion of the information we're learning becomes so horrifying. So I have to tell you about it. And then at some point we become so wrapped up in the importance of the issues that we become the thing that they hate, and I think we all have, it's a journey we're all on, and we have to, I don't know what I'm saying. It's hard. It's very hard.
Sorry to push those questions on you.
No, it's true. I think the word I was looking for, what is the word that means when you end up being people hating? I wanted to say it so easily, but I can't think about it. Like,
Antagonistic?
it's oh, I can hear the curse there.
Misanthropic?
Misanthropic. That's it. It's just we end up othering ourselves and not really caring because at this point, like, the animals are more important. So, F you, we're gonna do what we need to do to save the animals. And the worst part is sometimes that can't save the animals. So sometimes we do have to pull all of our punches and we have to spoon feed non-vegans the information. And even though it's going to be slow and it's going to be the longer path, it may be more likely to lead to veganism. And that's what the hardest part is. It's like, I don't know, it feels, I haven't watched Karate Kid, but it feels like Karate Kid, which is like, just hold back, just.
Yeah, we need a lot of wisdom, I guess. Being vegan is one thing, and as you pointed out, it comes with its own mental charge, mental weight and challenges. But then going into activism, I find that it is an answer to many of those issues we feel from becoming vegan. Like a solution, a way to do something to address those feelings of powerlessness. But, is it, please share your story of activism and how you decided to take that extra step.
First it started, just trying to find a way to do something. Again, you have all this information and first you think, well, I'm just going to tell people about it and it's going to change people's minds, and that doesn't work. And then you're like, well, maybe I'll argue with people online and that's going to work, and that doesn't work. And you're like, what if I just bake a lot for people? And that doesn't work either. And I tried a lot of things. I volunteered at farm sanctuaries, and I went out and did like Cube of Truth, and I just felt like it wasn't for me. I mean, like, since then, I've done Cube of Truth since then, and it was just at that time I was not ready to talk to anybody, so I just stood in the cube and, was really mad standing behind the mask just looking at people. But I'm a writer, and I was thinking, well, what if I started blogging about this? That would be helpful. And what if I But it was really hard to reach people. So, but I do think that is it. It's like we read up and we get all this information and we gather it, and then without an outlet for it, it's so depressing and it's so sad and so anxiety producing. And That is how you end up telling your friends about it so much to the point where they're just like, I love you, but you've joined a cult. And can we just not talk about this? And you realize that you can't keep going to the same person with your information. You actually have to reach a wider audience and you need to plant seeds widely. So I do think that everyone should try and find the activism that speaks to them and try. I mean, you try a million things. There's so many ways to help. And there's, it's not just protesting in front of a place or just, arguing with people online. There's so many ways you can use your skills. There's so many nonprofits that need, if you have, office skills, they need your help. So.
What I like about Dog Meat Farm is the creativity of it. It's the way you went looking for something original that was not tested, but which is at the same time, genius in the way it exposes the hypocrisy of people, of the public. How can we be more creative in our activism?
Well, one of the things that I find is pretty fun about dog meat is none of this was the intention. These are all outcomes of it that are lucky outcomes. I made it because I enjoyed it. I made something for myself. And I didn't expect anyone to see it. And I was just enjoying the process of making something for myself. And I think that when we consider ourselves, what amuses us, what interests us, finding that, you're going to find other people through that. So it doesn't have to be a satirical campaign. It could be, whatever the thing is that you're really into, you're going to find other people through it. So I think. And I think that that is also given the project longevity is because to me it's still amusing. I still find joy in it, and I think we need more people who are passionate and who are able to stick with the thing. So you have to kind of let go of also what other people think, And we can. I actually had a woman today. A friend of mine I was having coffee with, and she's not vegan. And she goes, "So have they figured out what is the best way to make someone go vegan?" And I laughed and I'm like, "No, we haven't figured that out. We would like to, but what's really nice is we need a million ways because there is, millions of different types of people." And so, yeah.
But it surprises me in a way that there aren't more creative ways of doing activism out there. I always hear about the Cube of Truth, which isn't, an amazing idea, and I'm glad that it's widespread now. But how do you explain the lack of, trying something new and just going outside the norm of what activism means?
Well, I think I go back to an email I got early on. I got a I spent money to buy a mobile billboard in Las Vegas that just advertised my dog meat, and it just rolled around in Las Vegas for a month, and it just brought me a lot of joy. And somebody emailed me and said, "You can do that? Who, don't you have to ask permission?" And I've said this in other interviews where I'm like, permission from who? Like, it turns out you can do things. You can just make things. And I think that there's a lot of feeling that there's some process we need to go through before we make something. And I remember when I went to my first vegan conference, and I was so excited. Like, I went to all the talks, and I filled a notebook with all my ideas. I was like, what if we did this and this and this? And then we had a meeting in California, and then the Portland activism group got together for a meetup. And I'd never met any of these people before, even though I'd come from Portland. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to meet you. Here are all my ideas. And they were like, we have all of our other stuff already in place. We have, these protests and working on this bill and like the very organized things. And my first thought was like, oh, well, I'll put mine at the end of the agenda, and eventually in a few years, we're going to get to some of my ideas. And then I went, oh, right, this isn't an organization. I don't need to ask permission of other vegans to do things. I can just make things. And I think I wonder if that is one of the reasons we're stymied, is we think that we need approval, or we need money, or we need, we need to think about the priorities of things. I mean, like, if you think about it, I mean, and I often think about it as I think about the money and effort and time that could instead be used in, say, undercover investigations. I find that, to me, that is the most valuable thing we could be doing. It's funny because it's not dog meat. I think the most important thing we should be doing is getting video and showing people what this is. But that's not going to reach everybody. So just as much as we need to be, taking our B12, we also need ice cream, and we should be eating some ice cream too, So yeah.
Well, do you think that people are getting desensitized to all the footage of slaughterhouses? And I want to generalize that to other activism work. Do you think that there is a ceiling and that someday this won't be as effective as it was?
Well, I think that the one thing that is important about it is I can remember on my own vegan journey was my thought that these videos must be old. They must be from another country. They must be showing something that, happened just once. And so that's the unfortunate part about it, is there's always people who haven't seen it yet, and there's always people who think that. And at the minute they go, "Hey, maybe I should look at this stuff." And if they see it all stopped in 2024, they're going to be like, "Well, that doesn't happen anymore." So it serves the purpose of when that person is about to go vegan and they have to go look at something, they'll find something from Mercy for Animals that just happened last month, and they can be horrified. And so I don't think that that's going to pass, but I do think that, especially as a vegan, God, the stuff that I've seen again and again, and you're like, you just watch that the cow in the UK get hit by a truck, or hit by a police car. And I was shocked when I saw it. And then I just scrolled on by because I'm like, what? I have only so much empathy. I'm not saying I'm not empathetic of it, but I'm just saying, where there's only, I'm going to keep seeing it. If we're always just going to keep seeing it.
I think it's my own bias because I did not, decide to become vegan because of that footage, because I was exposed to that footage. So I guess it's hard for me, and I don't look for that footage. I look away just like you. Well, you did look, but then because I don't find it constructive to just be sad all the time and just fill my heart with all those negative feelings when I'm already doing something. I don't know what you make of that attitude, but
No, not at all. I mean, I totally feel that, especially as, and you're doing your activism, is we know it. We know what's happening. I don't need to see it. I went on one vigil and it destroyed me, and I don't think it would be helpful for the movement if I went to another one, if put me out of commission for another, 2 weeks. But at the same time, is I get what you're saying, though, that there are many people who that's not the reason they went vegan. And that is where you get into the creativity of being like, what do we need to do? We need to do so many different ways of reaching people. Like, I really like Speciesism WTF. I don't know if you know about them. They're doing the milking women as a big art, like, experience. And I just think that, like, that may not make someone go vegan. It might. It also makes someone go, what am I looking at, and what is this, and what are they rep who's making this, and why? And I think that we need more stuff like that. It doesn't have to be the thing. It can be a representation of the thing to get people interested, to bring them in it. And I love that campaign for the creativity of it. And I think that we should, more artists and, people should be exploring what can we do in ways that are just outside of the box.
And I want to quickly go back to that message of you don't need to go through a process or ask the permission of someone or even go through an organization to do your own activism. this, you know, speaks to me as someone who decided to just launch a podcast out of nowhere. What would you say to the people who are listening and who are considering activism, but, you know, there is this hesitation? How do you bring them, you know, on the other side?
Well, I think, again, for me, it was finding what is my skill and how can I use it? Mine's advertising. So I'm so used to just sitting down and coming up with 10 different things and then having to just choose one of them and going with it. And I think a podcast is a fabulous idea, being like, what is it that's interesting to me and who do I want to talk to? Because other people would be curious. So I think it is sitting down with yourself and having this moment of being like, what am I interested in? What, you know, maybe, you know, like for me, I can say the journey that I'm on right now is thinking, I don't do a lot of street activism with Elwoods. A lot of it's just in person. A lot of it's online. And I've done one-on-one tabling events, but I haven't done it with a big group of people more than a handful of times. And I certainly don't know how to film them. I don't know how to mic myself and put the audio and get the camera and have debates. And I don't know how to change that debate into something that's editable on, you know, with the on-screen text. It's out of my wheelhouse. And I was thinking, well, if I want to learn how to do this, maybe I should film it. Maybe this is a podcast. Maybe this is a podcast that's going to help teach other activists how to do this, regardless of whether I actually even want to do it. I actually think that I don't like, as I listed all those things, I'm like, God, that sounds like a lot of work. And I think I should just keep doing what I'm doing. But how interesting it would that be as content to be like interviewing activists and finding out what they're doing and how they do it. And then you've got a resource for activists. Like, so that's just like a journey. That's one example of something we can do that's exciting. You could be like, I'm really interested in turtle rescue, and it may not be vegan, but you might want to know something about it and learn how to do it and create a short, you know, a short video about it, or you want to educate people and you can make a brochure. And I just think that there's so much value in what interests you will interest other people.
Okay, I want to get to the second thing that I admire the most about this initiative. And it is the humor attached to it. I love the videos I see online of, you know, on social media of people getting angry about, you know, vegans promoting dog meat. And, you know, what is the place for humor in the vegan activism? That, you know, that's a question I was asking myself in preparation for this interview. You know, apart from this initiative and maybe, you know, some others, you know, some movie productions, like short movies or things like that, there's a lot of seriousness, there's a lot of cries and sadness and not much humor, not much, you know, I guess I'll use this word, positivity. And, you know, the things that energize you and make you feel like, you know, we're winning, you know, this is. So how come this is so funny? What's so funny about this situation? And should we instill more humor in activism?
Well, I think it's a really hard question to answer. And so I was doing stand-up comedy about the same time I went vegan. And as I got more vegan, the less I could do comedy because I was just so depressed. Like, the information is just so hard to deal with. It's too much. And so I stopped, and it was funny how many people were like, oh, Molly, you should do comedy about veganism. And like, there's this rule in comedy about you don't punch down. You're like, you never make fun of anybody lower than you. And you're like, well, I don't want to make fun of vegans because everybody already hates us. So you can't be like self-deprecating, and then you can't make fun of the audience because the audience eats meat. And so there are comedians who have figured out how to do it. I never did. But why this is so funny is because it's dogs. It's taking the, for the lack of a better word, sacred cow, the thing we love, And doing the worst thing possible, which is funny because we do it to everyone. We do it every day to all the other animals. And so it becomes funny because one, you know we're not doing it. And you can hold up like a wiener dog in front of the camera and their big sad eyes, and you're like, what if I, you know, it's ridiculous. And I think the idea of making it, showing how ridiculous our actions are, becomes very funny. And it was, I don't know. I can't, I wish I could explain it, and I wish I could figure out like what is the secret about what else we can do like this. But I do know that there's so much power in taking the other side and just showing it back to them. So, Lifting Vegan Logic has been doing some amazing videos where he has started taking meat eaters videos and then saying the same things, but often he'll put dog meat in as well, which is great. He's, somebody's just like, here's what I, as a meat eater, here's what I ate in eat in a day, and I start with like, 5 pounds of pug bacon, and then I, like it just sounds disgusting and awful. And I think there's just there yeah there's a lot of power in mocking the other side, because we're always mocked. And we're always talking about we're always talking about the animals, and but we're never talking about them, the people who are choosing to do so, and how silly it is, and how hypocritical it is. And I also think Vegan Sidekick has done amazing work in this. Like, he was so inspiring to me as an early vegan. I'm loving seeing more people bring humor into activism, and I wish we could, I want to find more ways to do it. And it's ripe. It's ripe. It's ready. Also, don't know if I was part of the ad campaign in Los Angeles, the Hate Vegans. Have you seen this?
No.
If you look up 888 Hate Vegans on Instagram, and the website is hatevegans.com. It is a lawyer who specializes in helping carnivores, meat eaters who have been wronged by a vegan. A vegan has, shown them where eggs came from, and they were emotionally damaged, and or they accidentally ate a veggie hot dog, and it just, ugh, so disgusting. You could be entitled to compensation. Call 188 Hate. Hate Vegans. So we've made a there's a whole ad campaign that's going around this, and the website's funny and the Instagram's funny, and we're just trying to like show that vegans have a sense of humor, which, it's obvious why we don't, but we can.
And it's healthier to relate to the situation with humor. I was reading one of the early texts of the Vegan Society. It was one of the early founders. Don't ask me why I've been doing this in my free time, but he was saying, something in the lines of, "It is so absurd to see a grown man drinking milk." And he was making, the parallel with, he's not a kid anymore. Why is he drinking milk? And that was back in the 1940s. And I found that so funny. I mean,
The timing of it.
yes. And yeah, some of my favorite activists out there take this crisis that we're in and this very serious situation with lots of humor, because I guess it's a survival instinct
It is,
in
yeah.
a way, and that is a an instinct present in many, frontline activists, like the
Right.
people in doing rescue or
The gallows humor is it's preservation. It's how do we get through this? There's if we throw ourselves directly into the despair, we can't carry on. And we all need that. Because I mean, you need that in life. You don't just need that in activism. Life's hell unless you're able to be like, but at least it's warm. I don't know, whatever that is. It's just we need that, and we need to be able to find what is the light on the edge of the dark, and that it'll bring more people in too. And especially if you're trying to make new vegans. No one's gonna come be vegan if we're all just like, come to our sad party. It's a funeral all the time.
So what's your favorite reactions from Dog Meat Farmer?
Oh my God. I just had an incident yesterday that just brought me great joy. I am working on an Elwoods project and I was scouting out dog parks to shoot a video at, and I have these really big magnets on my truck. And so I drive the pickup truck and I put two of them on the tailgate because you have to look at them then, and they're really big and they're just I'm farming dogs, come to my website. And I was taking a phone call in the car and I watched these two women with sunglasses, and they had just taken their little dogs out of their car and they stood where they could see me in through the mirror, and they were just hands on their hips, just mouths open, just glaring at me. And my favorite thing was not responding. Like, they kept moving to try and get my attention. And then I was just like, I don't think I need to engage with you right now. And I'm just going to let you go on this journey with your dog by yourself. So just sometimes it is just the everyday interactions that I can provoke just by putting it out there. And what's really nice about that activism is I don't have to be part of it. You know, I think as an early activist, I was so tired. Like, I was just like arguing nonstop on Twitter, and you're not making a difference. And this would be like, it's the equivalent of like leafleting. And I'm just like, I'm just dumping it on the city and then I just leave. And I'm just like, good luck with all of that information, guys. So that is one. And then I do like getting messages, even though that's not I'm going vegan. It's people saying, look, when I first saw this, I was hysterical and I was very upset. And I went on this journey and you know what? I'm still going to eat meat, but good on you. And this is very funny. And I know that that is not the purpose. You know, obviously we want people to go vegan, but that itself is like, here's a seed that's been planted. They're like, one, you got me. Good. Good for you. Two, I looked at all your stuff. Got it. Okay, I'll follow you. You're funny. And it's just such a begrudging, like, okay, I got it. And now they're ripe for the next vegan to come along and punch them with the next piece of information. You know, it's just, maybe I'm not making vegans, but I'm, you know, ripening them, I guess. You know, I don't know, for the lack of better term, but. And I think that that's also the thing, is we have to be okay with that. We have to be okay with, this is not good. This is not the death blow that makes you vegan. I don't know what all my violent metaphors today show, what mind space I'm in.
Something I like to fantasize about when I look at those reactions is, what if this was our world and, you know, this reaction was for every type of farming, you know, yeah. That farming, you know, the norm was you're shocked and you hyperventilate when you see mm-hmm. someone, you know, farming for, you know, pigs or cows or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just as shocking as dogs. It's like, it's like a, you know, a glance into this wonderful fantasy uh-huh. world.
It's amazing. Yeah. I remember, having this conversation with somebody who was really upset. He knocked over all my stuff at Vegan Dale when he got mad, and he cleared all my tables of stuff. And one of the things was, somebody, another vegan, said to him, he's like, keep your cool, man. Vegans don't even do this in the butcher shop when it is real. Like, we just, you gotta keep it together. Welcome to veganism. Hold it together. We're not, as much as we want to tear everything down. And I then said later, I was like, I would love to do that. Wouldn't you love to go to a farmer's market and flip a table? Wouldn't that just bring you? And you're just like, and we can't. And we're giving people the fantasy that we want, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's so true. I never thought about it. But yeah, we put them in our shoes and they feel the same way we do, but about other animals, and never put.
And they get to react and we do not get to. And so it's very cathartic, like, to see someone, like, we may be laughing at them, but I think if you take it from if you watch that kid, the viral video of the kid going dogs, you're like, imagine being able to be like, pigs, you're doing this to pigs. You're disgusting. Like, oh my God, it's just, oh, it's all what we want. I want to go do that. I want to go somewhere and just one big temper tantrum at the farmer's market, which is due me for the year, and I can't.
Well, I don't know if that's very efficient in
It's
terms
not efficient, it's not
of
effective, but it make me feel good.
I do agree with you. I 100% agree with you. I've said
Yeah.
that so many times in this podcast. I wish I could go in a butcher shop and just, smear,
Yeah.
paint,
Yeah.
red paint everywhere.
I just don't know if I don't think personally I don't want to go out on a limb and say this. Never mind. We'll cut this. Yeah, forget it.
Well, now I'm curious.
I don't want to discourage activists from finding ways to express themselves, but I do think that I personally don't find a die-in in a supermarket to be the most effective way. I think that we might be putting off more people than we're educating or convincing. And so again, if unless it's connected specifically to a grocery store that's carrying a farm that is abusing animals in a way that we have, captured on video, and we want them, it's attached to a boycott or something. But I think that we need to be very specific about those, and we need to, you have to think about the optics of these things. And unfortunately, while we want to be loud and passionate, unfortunately, sometimes that's not the way, I guess. But I don't want to put down anybody who is doing that work, and I think that we should all do what we can. So.
I mean, the data and the studies done by institutions like Fanalytics back that claim, that understanding. And yeah, I completely agree with you. That was something Robert Sheek writes in his book, The Impactful Vegan. How there is a hierarchy of activism. It's not all forms of activism that are equal, but yeah. It's good to talk about context too.
Yeah, it's really hard because you think that I think going to a restaurant to protest them serving foie gras is a very specific action. And while you may not be able to change people's minds by going out there with a bullhorn and annoying all the restaurant owners and goers, and then you put that on social media, that may not be as effective as, say, standing in front of it with a video showing what happens to them and then letting people see it, and I think that if we are more nuanced with our, again, we want to use a sledgehammer, and sometimes we should be using like a screwdriver. I don't know.
I agree. I completely agree. And I mean, we need, to foster critical thinking in everywhere, including, vegan activism. It's not the exception to the rule. We were talking about the funny part of, the initiative. And something else I was wondering about, around this initiative and around, the role of dogs in our society is, sure, we confront people in their hypocrisy of, do our dogs, the same as cows and so on. But don't you think that there is some form of hierarchy between species? Like a bug and a
Yeah.
dog versus,
Of course.
a pig.
Yes.
It's not the same
N
degree of
no.
sentience,
No.
And yeah, I sound like Peter Singer, but
Yeah.
he's making that point, and he's the one who came up with speciesism, so.
Well, no, I think obviously speciesism exists amongst vegans, and we'd love to hold ourselves to the high moral ground that like everything is the same. A dust mite is an ant, is a pig, is a boy, is a bear. I don't know how that quote goes, but I mean, I think what it comes down to is, I think I'm allowed to have my own personal hierarchy of animals as long as it doesn't impact them. And there are things that, we also do not live in a vegan world. So there are some things that, sometimes we do things that are hypocritical, and we can't be perfect. We are humans, but it's all about intention. So, like for me, I just know the way that if I see two animals on the side of the road that have been hit by a car, you know, you're going to have a different feeling if it's a dog versus if it's a squirrel. And it's you can't help it. And I think that it's unhelpful to pretend like, oh, I'm just as devastated. And you're just like, well, who do you have a relationship with? I bet if you had grown up with pet squirrels, that you would feel much more pain when you see a dead squirrel. So, I don't know. I just it's helpful when it comes to making choices that we can say that we don't have to hurt any of them. Like, I can easily put a spider outside. It's much harder, say, if my whole kitchen is infested with termites, to say, oh, I'm just gonna live with them, or I have lice and I just gotta just figure out a way to live with them. You know, whatever the thing is, we have to be realistic about things.
Yeah, and I think goes back to the image people have of vegans, you know. And hearing those ideas, I guess anyone would think they're completely disconnected, those people.
Right. You're like, how do you even drive down the road? How do you walk down the street? How do you even do anything? And
Well, I had a vegan on this podcast at the very beginning. I wanted to, interview veteran vegans, and he had been vegan forever. And he said, I feel so sad and so heartbroken every time I use my car because bugs hit the windshield. And I was thinking, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh God. Well, I think again it is it's a if you were driving down the road and you're going through a bunch of gnats, you're going to feel differently than if you're going through a bunch of butterflies. Like, it's just we can't help to have these connections, these feelings. And it was funny because I was actually talking to the kid. I was talking to the kid about the kid who busted up the actually, this story is not relevant. I thought it was. It had to do with driving down the road and killing a bunch of animals, but this is how I was trying to make him go vegan. So it's not worthwhile. Never mind.
It's okay. 10% of podcasting is rambling.
It is rambling. But no, I do think that there's, to get back to that specific thread is thinking about there's a woman and I can't remember. I think her name is, oh, I can't remember. I wish I could reference her. I saw a thread on Instagram that was a woman who had made a post. She's like, let's talk about imperfect veganism. I'll go first. And she's like, sometimes if I buy something and I find it has honey in it, I eat it anyway. What's your turn? And everybody was sharing their things. And it was such a cathartic thing because what's really interesting is about it is you could say, when I get sugar ants in my kitchen, I put out poison because I don't know what else to do. And another vegan could say, hey, have you tried this? And that person go, maybe, actually, no, I haven't. Let me try that. And then we all get to go on another vegan journey together to find out, does this thing work? Or if you're saying, ooh, so that didn't work. I'm glad we're not on camera. Continuity.
You
It
anger
fell.
the
My God, God, they're like, we must be perfect. Shoot. Oh God. So yeah, don't poison the ants. You can use cinnamon along the borders, sweep them up, take them outside. But yeah, no, just finding out ways that we're not perfect is it's helpful for the outside too, because I mean, I was thinking about it'd be really fun, and I'm going to share it here on your podcast. A ve great vegan campaign idea, which is asking imperfect vegan questions, the things we don't have answers to let the non-vegans know we don't know the answers, and we would love your help on it. Like when they say, well, I was at the Rowdy Girl movie premiere in New York City, and a woman, I think a non-vegan, asked this question with genuine concern. She goes, well, let's say I know a chicken farmer who wants to give up chicken farming. Like, what does she do with all those chickens? Like, how's she gonna, like, what kind of, she goes, what kind of finances or support or government, government things are in place to help her so she doesn't, so she doesn't lose money. And everyone kind of laughed. We're like, there's nothing you can do. If you're a chicken farmer with 20,000 chickens and you don't want to farm them and you don't want to kill them, there's nothing you can do. Nobody's going to adopt 20,000 chickens. You can't feed 20,000 chickens. You can't, like, wouldn't that be a really good billboard? We're like, what do we do? And then we actually open it to a debate. And now there's a podcast about scholars being like, what is the solution? Is it government intervention? Is it, whatever the thing is, what do we do? And we don't know. And I don't know. And help. Please help us.
Well, actually, I do have the same, unanswerable questions. And I was thinking of getting someone like a big vegan brain like Peter Singer and asking those questions too. But the fact that we don't even, openly, because and that's an issue I discovered by doing this podcast. I'm talking to other vegans and I'm talking about activism. And I find that it is not the case for most vegan platforms out there. We're always talking to the non-vegans, to the greater public. And so we're always on,
Defense.
defense. Exactly. We're always, trying to convince and trying to advance the cause and all of that, but we're not talking to each other. That there's no space where we're here and feeling, enough comfortable and, open-minded to have those
Well,
conversations.
it's really scary because I don't know if you know, but vegans are really judgmental. So, you gotta be careful. You don't you could say the wrong thing and suddenly, it's gonna get out there that the dog meat farmer, whatever, sometimes is saying, that it's okay to not make someone go vegan immediately. Maybe it's okay for someone to just be vegan at home and they're like, ah, so we do have to be careful. But at the same time is when you don't open yourself up to these conversations, you can't advance the movement. We can't change things if we're so afraid, of being canceled or whatever. But I think that things are changing. I when I went to the I spoke at the National Animal Rights Day event in New York City. And originally I was planning a speech as myself, like Molly, the not the dog meat farmer that was going to be, like, oh, the animals, and I feel sad, and here's how I do humor to whatever. And then I went, wait a minute, they didn't hire the dog meat farmer to give another vegan speech. They hired the dog meat farmer to give a dog meat farmer speech. And so I asked the organizer, I said, is it okay if I just come in hot? Like, hope you anemic vegans are getting all your B12. You just look like you're barely standing up. And she's like, yes, we want that.
Well, well, well. How great to see all your anemic faces looking back at me. I hope they're distributing some B12 in the back for you. So I have a little chat to give here. So again, I'm Molly Elwood. And first, I want to say to the person who liberated the Labradors from our barn last night, we have you on video. So that's property theft. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat is a family farm. And we treat our meat dogs like family. They have access to pastures. They have warm beds. They are safe until their one bad day. Everything is done humanely and ethically. And perhaps most importantly, it's local. We give our lives to these dogs and to the profits we get from them. And yet, like other animal farmers, we are often attacked by militant, angry vegans like yourselves. And we know they're vegan because their arguments are baseless and hysterical. These vegans, they talk about the unseen suffering of small picnic breeds in cages, pugs being gassed, male retrievers shot because they can't give milk. They complain about corgis feeling fear, Frenchies feeling pain, and cockapoos slaughtered by the hundreds. In fact, I received this very email just yesterday. I'm shocked. This is beyond the boundaries of humanitarian kindness. It's disgusting and deplorable. I have a poodle and I would never let any harm come to him. This is an actual email I received. How would you like it if someone had a people farm and decided to eat you? I feel like I'm going to throw up now. Thanks for ruining my morning. It's disgusting and morally wrong. Just wrong, wrong, wrong. She's saying my family organic ethical farm is wrong. P.S. I'm a vegetarian. Ignorance. These plant heads have never stepped foot on a dog meat farm, so how would they know? Allow me to herd all your myths down the chute of awkwardness to the killing floor of truth. Our dogs are raised for this. They're not pets. This is their purpose. It's our family's tradition. It's the circle of life. Humans have been eating dogs for centuries. They taste delicious. Other animals eat dogs. Dogs would overrun us if we didn't eat them, or else I'm told they may go extinct. Dogs don't suffer the same way we do. Plants feel pain too. We're smarter than dogs and everything in moderation. Also, you are all eating avocados. So, and besides, you know who didn't eat dogs? Hitler. Hitler never ate a dog. So which side of history do you want to be on? Right. All this points to the fact that you can love dogs and eat them. It's fine. What I can tell you about unseen suffering, it's the unseen dog meat farmer. Middle of the night, gently cradling a Rottweiler who won't make it before kindly thumping it on the floor to end its life according to USDA standards.
We need more of whatever. And it was just this kind of breath of fresh air to be like, let's find some new ways to talk about old subjects. And, you know, I'm 40, so I'm not like the next generation, but I'm excited for the next generation of vegans who are maybe not so stigmatized and so afraid to have different conversations.
Well, I do, again, my personal bias, I feel like an outsider. I have, mm-hmm. yes, vegan friends, but I was never, you know, I never had any idea of the judgment that, mm-hmm. so I never, and I still don't mm-hmm. feel, you know, uncomfortable or fearful to yeah. ask those questions. In fact, I feel like the urgency to ask them, you know.
Oh, right. It is. It's very urgent. Like the time is now to say, if you don't agree with a kind of activism, we can't be emperor's new clothes about it. It's kind of like when a new vegan restaurant opens up and the food's really bad and we all have to go, it's great. And I'm like, you can't, because then the noggin vegans are going to come in there and go, this is what you think is good. We're like, we are obligated to give it the 1-star review, or better yet, let's message them privately and say, that was really awful what happened. But similar to be like, you know, I know a lot of people who hate tempeh. We should just be okay that tempeh is not for everybody, and don't tell everyone if they're starting out, you should try tempeh.
You know, I recently went to a vegan restaurant, and this restaurant was the one everyone recommended me for when I first became vegan. Like, oh, this is the starter vegan restaurant. You know, you'll like it.
Yeah.
It's good comfort food. Uh-huh. And it was a horrible experience. The food was disgusting, truly disgusting. And I was just, you know, giving my feedback, sharing my feedback to other friends, not openly. Yes. You know,
they're like, shh, quiet, don't tell anybody.
Not even that. They were like, no, it was good. I mean, it's sure, yeah, there is. But I mean, seriously, when was the last time you went back to that restaurant? That's the real question you need to ask.
Right.
And yeah, I agree. I mean, when was, you know, dishonesty and just being, you know, I just hate that attitude. It's so, I don't know, I find it disgusting in a way.
Right. And it's not advanced. It's not going to advance the movement. It's pretty myopic to just be like, kind of like early on, I would say currently we're in a very good vegan cheese space, but I think that, you know, 10 years ago, five years ago, the vegan cheese space was really gross, and we should have all just agreed, like, everything's good about veganism except for the cheese, and you'll get over it, you'll find other stuff to eat, just give it, it'll catch up, you know, just give it some time. But I did say that a lot to friends who were going vegan, and they were like, well, what do you do about cheese? I was like, I learned about what happens to the dairy cows. It's not that I was able to find a replacement. I just stopped because I felt so bad. But now there's a lot of great cheeses out there. But I mean, similarly, I think that a lot of people were lying and being like, diet is great. And we're like, stop it. It sticks to your teeth. I hate
It's disgusting. I hate diet, okay? And
it. Some of it's gotten better. I think they're new. I'm not lying. I'm not just saying this. I think I've had some good diet lately,
I
but I
don't
still
know.
sometimes prefer pizza without cheese as
I'm
well.
afraid to try it. I have a trauma associated with diet.
Oh. Yeah. I think if you layer it with enough stuff, like if the cheese isn't the point of the nachos, but it's like in the middle of a seven layer dip and it's not going to stick to your teeth that way, you can. But that's not like that's how good of a selling point of cheese is that if you bury it with a whole bunch of other stuff? It's fabulous. If you can't taste it or sense it, mwah.
Well, let me tell you, I invited a vegan entrepreneur who came up with this good vegan cheese, and she was telling me, I have like to be forceful with vegans to, so they give me their real, truthful
Opinion, yeah.
opinion. And I am always, telling them, you need to say the truth, because if you don't give me the right feedback, I'm not going to make good cheese.
Yes.
How is she going to make better cheese if we're all lying to her?
I know. Well, similar. I mean, that's the same for also for any type of, let's say, any type of activism, too. If we're all saying this is amazing, this is great, keep doing it, My dog meat posts don't get better when everyone is like thumbs upping them, even if they're not that good. I actually have a there's a meat eater that follows the Elwood podcast, I mean, Elwood Facebook page, and every so often he shows up and he rates my posts. And yesterday's Father's Day post, he gave it 2 out of 10. I was like, okay, good to know. From the meat eaters, they don't like it. The vegans liked it, but the meat eater, okay. I don't know if he's doing it just I'm obviously he's trolling me and I don't really know how he feels, but it helps.
Exactly. And I feel the same way about this podcast. I want to get people's feedback, I mean, real feedback about the quality of
Honest.
the episodes. Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just wonder, are you saying the truth? Or is
Yeah.
this just a way to encourage me?
Well, that's why it's so nice. You have to have in any kind of creative pursuit. Having the person you trust to tell you the truth despite it hurting. You got to be able to you similarly you've got to be able to give that feedback to people, and I think that that's how you like test your friendship, I guess. Find out how strong it is. Sometimes you give that feedback and that's the last time you hear from them. Other times they come out with you, they're like, well, I changed it. What do you think about this? And it's great.
Well, in my personal, in my life, feedback helped me tremendously in my career, in my personal life. It helped me grow into the person I am, and I love the person I am right now. I'm a better person because of feedback, sometimes harsh feedback, but
Oh yeah.
it's good. Why not? Why be
Oh,
afraid? It's a gift.
it's so hard to be that vulnerable, and you have to be I mean that I think that takes a lot of self-work for yourself to be like, I am confident enough with my intentions that I am ready for that punch in the stomach that I'm about to get, and then I'm going to like take it away and I'm going to sit with it and I come back to the person and say thank you, may I have another. Like it's just we have to be okay with it, and the person giving to it, like you have to have that comfortable relationship too to be able to say you may tell me this, I might even lash out when you tell it to me, but I'm going to come back and say thank you. Like I'm going to be like shut up and walk away and just be like, oh, he's right. And then come back and be like, okay, thank you. And having those comfortable relationships are very, it's so helpful.
Exactly, and that's something I like about social media, actually, the fact that it's anonymous and people feel free to show a bit of their real self online.
Exactly.
I mean, sometimes it gets really mean and there is a problem here. But still, I love that dose of truthfulness. And I do critique social media a lot, but you'll never see me critique them for the hate comment, the bad comment, or this is not my thing.
Well, yeah, I think that, like, I've gotten comments, I mean, that are really helpful from, I don't know, probably meat eaters. I think vegans are still like, yay, veganism. But being like, this post is just way too long. Like, did you expect me to read this? Or, you know, what is she even talking about? I'm like, good to know. We won't do that one again. Like, and I think also one thing that's really helpful is if you make enough content, you can't be precious about it. Because, you know, we need more higher quantity, maybe less quality. And that way you're going to learn over time that you can how to fix things. So,
and some of my favorite posts out there, and I'm not talking about, you know, specifically Dog Meat Farm, but some of my favorite posts out there are just cheap videos and bad montage of something. I just love it.
Yeah, well, it's funny too that I found that sometimes the content that I spend the least amount of time on is the one that goes really well. Like, I didn't plan it and I just did it, and it's impulsive and it's funny. And yeah, I follow a lot of meme accounts on Instagram, and I was just laughing just recently. I think it was like, it's kind of like history of memes or something, and it's from a long time ago, and it was the soccer player who falls and then he spins off into space, and that techno song is playing, da 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 da, and it's just him like rolling through different scenes, and it is just the most enjoyable. Like, imagine that with a purpose. Like, if that had some message to it, like, maybe that's the next thing for vegans, is to like find the memes that were really viral and like what would be funny. Like, I don't know.
Well, vegan memes, I absolutely love them, and I love that it's content for vegans. And, you know, we were talking about humor. I can't believe, you know, we missed the vegan memes thing, but yeah, it's amazing. I love vegan memes.
Yes. Well, I think that there's so my friend that I work with on a lot of Elwood stuff, Jacob Yap, Jake Yap is a comedian and vegan. And I was talking to him about this, and he had this really good it was something that happened in his real life. So he's a comedian and he does radio shows and stuff. And he said when he first got into radio, he had one of those like 4 a.m. slots, you know, or he had to get up really, you know, he had to get up at 3 a.m. to get to the radio station to start broadcasting at 4. And he's like, he's just like, we're just making jokes and nonsense. Like, what are we doing? What is the point of this? And he's, you know, we're not saving the world. And he says that his producer or whatever you call it said to him, he's like, you know, we may not be saving the world, but the ambulance drivers who are on their way to work, they want to laugh. They need something to get through it. The doctors, the people who are saving lives, they need something to keep them going. And that's what our role is. Our role is to keep them going. And you think that's where the point of humor is in the vegan movement, is the slaughterhouse, you know, undercover slaughterhouse worker needs something. He needs some champion to say, like, look, it's not all bleak and dark, and we're here for you. And I may not be there, you know, doing these same things, but I see you and I get you, and let's make a vegan meme. Like, I know, and it's just the tiniest little thing, but we all need that. And it's not just the undercover slaughterhouse worker who needs boosting. It's the person who just went vegan and now they're all depressed and they're like, I've been vegan for 2 years and everyone hates me. Or, you know, I love the vegan meme that was it's like a cheerleader and a goth sitting on a park bench and they're eating ice cream. And it says, when all you have in common is veganism. It's just like,
I love that. It's very true. I mean, I just always, I'm in wonderment of how this problem. I know a lot of vegan activists like to compare veganism to other social justice movements, but I do find that veganism is its own thing. It is quite exceptional in the complexity of the problem, the how great the problem is, and also what it requires from you and how it unites you with just strangers.
Well, and I think that it's one of the rare movements too that is not, as much as we at the top of this, we were trying to say, oh, you're a rebellious, you know, far left punk who, you know, pierced whatever, and like, no, there are conservative vegans, there are Trump voting vegans, there are vegans from all around the world. Like, it is, the only thing you have in common is you both use nutritional yeast. And in fact, I've gone on a lot of vegan meetups that I hated. I'm just like, oh my God, no, not to judge them. I'm just like, I'm not like these people. We can share recipes and we can talk about the animals, but beyond that, we don't have anything in common. And I think that makes our movement sometimes so hard, because you're trying to mobilize people who have all of these other outside concerns and wants and things. And there's professionals and there's students and there's moms and there's grandparents. And it's just, when all you have in common is, you know, this one thing, it's hard. It's hard to unite and motivate us all. And I think it's a lie for us to try and say that we're all the same. So that's also another reason for different types of activism and different types of podcasts. Like, I want the movement to be, I want the public facing part of the movement to be as inclusive as its embodiment, I guess, for lack of a better word. But it's like, I would love to see I'm not conservative, but I want to see some conservative vegan podcasts reach more vegans. Find more vegans in your movement. I don't care who you vote for at that point. I mean, I do care who you vote for, but I do want you to, you know, more vegans. Make them, please.
Exactly. I mean, it's very technical term, but
yes,
I invited on this show a couple of conservatives who described themselves as vegan and conservative. I also invited Dr. Vlasak, who's, you know, one of the officer of the Animal Liberation Front, who's like at the far left of even the left, you know, it's an anarchist movement.
Yeah.
And he's advocating for, you know, he's not advocating, but he's, you know, talking openly about how there is an argument for doing illegal stuff in terms of, you know, vegan animal rights activism.
Right.
And I just think it's wonderful that we have this much ability to just, you know, be appealing to every demographic out there. So why do we stick to a certain narrative or to a certain doctrine? Yeah. And we have arguments to appeal to the right, and we have arguments to appeal to the far left. Like, why are we not exploiting that potential?
I think it's a scary, like we said before, it's a scary thing of being afraid of upsetting a vocal majority, of saying that we want you to march under the same banner as these other people whom you disagree with on so many other fronts. And it's just like, we want our teams to be as monolithic as possible, so I'm pure, I don't want it, you know. But at the same time, is we have to recognize that it's much more complicated. Being human is much more complicated and nuanced than anything, and we can't be simplifying things just because it helps us feel better. It doesn't help the animals at all.
Yes, exactly. It's not about you, it's about the animals. It's not about your comfort or your And so, do you think that veganism is a religion? Because at first, you know, before starting this podcast and really diving deep into the activism scene and the world of veganism, I used to think that, you know, veganism is a religion was just something that anti-vegans would say on social media or in your face to make you mad, or that was something thoughtless. And then I would talk with vegans and they would say, yeah, for me, veganism is a religion. And in the way it is, like you said, you know, pure and it has mm-hmm. this dogma around it and mm-hmm. we need to all fall into the same line. And it feels like a religion. And, you know, I guess there's also the fact that what we require from people or what we ask from people is a big transformation in their lives, something akin to a conversion. So mm-hmm. I see the familiarity. So yeah, I'm asking you, do you think it's a religion?
I mean, I think you could take it as a religion. I think like all the things you said are very true. It's, you know, and it can feel very spiritual too. It can feel very transformational to be like, suddenly we're all, you know, my choices have an impact on the whole world. And it is a very powerful emotional feeling that we can get from being vegan. And I find myself moved all the time by it. I'm often feeling very spiritual about it, but I don't think it has to be. I think we can come at it from a purely logical perspective and say, we don't actually have to. Let's be very logical about this. And let's examine all the inputs and the outputs and do the diagrams and stuff. And we can also come to the same conclusion. And I think that you can't do that as much with religion. Religion is unprovable for the most part, I would guess. I'm not religious. I didn't have any religious upbringing. But I think that that's kind of one thing that's different, is you can't prove it. Whereas this is like, to take the religion aspect of it is a beautiful thing. And if you have the time to make space for that in your heart, I think that's beautiful. And I don't think it takes away anything from anyone. And I think that you can approach it, you know, when talking to people, you can approach it from different, you know, different perspectives. So I try not to like get into the emotional feels of it too much, because I'm worried that that's going to put off people and they're going to be like, oh, vegans are so emotional and stuff. And they're like, they're so woo-woo and wishy-washy. So I think it can, you know, depends on your audience, who you're talking to. But yeah, for me, sometimes it feels very, very religious.
Amazing. So Molly, I think we're ready to land this interview, this conversation. Did you have anything more to add before we end the recording?
I think I'd like to say that I want more people to feel empowered to do things for the animals. And as we do them, to be conscious of our audience at the same time, which is hard because it contradicts what I also said of doing the things that interest you. So I think it just, we have to be careful and keep in mind our goal, I guess. I didn't say that very, very poetically, but I just think, yeah, let me say that one more time. I really want people to feel empowered to do activism and to find their own path. And as they do so, you know, find both what interests them and, you know, what the optics look like from the outside, so we can try and do the most impact for the animals. So, and it's going to look different for everyone. So.
Amazing parting words. Thank you, Molly. You're amazing. Thank you for your work, for your great activism, for making us laugh so much and bringing us joy. And thank you for having accepted to be a guest on the Vegan Report.
No problem. It was really great to talk to you, and I hope we get to talk again.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.
All right, guys, so there you have it. It's always the same thing. They trip out over dogs, but then like they go home and eat cows, pigs, chickens. Look at this. Everybody's on his side, obviously, because that's exactly how they feel as well.
And they walk away. You're a fucking dickhead.
They walk away.
I will.
You're free to walk away.
I will.
Your gum just fell, man.
Yeah, I'm just going to fucking throw it at you.